Welcome to the Junk Refund Show, hosted by Alan J. Cook, founder of 1-800-JUNK-REFUND. Have you ever paid those expensive junk removal companies to take away some of your stuff, only to say to yourself, as a truck drives off down the street, some of that stuff wasn't junk? Did they try to sell it for you and give you some money back? No. Well, now there is a company that can do just that. Listen to our weekly Junk Refund Show on BBS Radio TV to learn how one lady spent $375 on junk removal and got $3,200 back. 1-800-JUNK-REFUND represents the next generation of junk removal. Learn how to not only save your money on junk removal, but how to get some money coming back. Plus, purchase one of our radio vouchers during the show to save even more on your junk removal. Let's get the junk out of your home and out of your life. Now, with your host, Alan J. Cook.
Everybody, happy new year to all of you. Happy 2026. Coming to you from Rockville, Maryland. Thrilled to start up the new year with another edition of the Junk Refund Show. And our goal this year, never miss a week. Make sure we're always making this a priority, that even if we're out doing jobs, we still block off the time to get the show done. And we appreciate the BBS Radio Network and all of our great folks out there that work with us and do such a great job of making this show possible. So anyway, happy new year to everybody, 2026. I hope you had a wonderful holiday season. I have had a great holiday season, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about that. I am sitting here, like many of you, watching the Capital One Orange Bowl, where Oregon leads Texas Tech 16-0. Texas Tech is the only team that beat my alma mater, BYU, this year, and they beat us twice, and they beat us bad both times. So I got to tell you, I'm not too disappointed that Oregon's winning this one. We'll see how it ends up, but right now it's all the Ducks. And a couple more great games coming up after this, too. So anyway, there's a lot of wonderful things going on. I want to comment on some things I've seen just on social media a little bit that talked about 2025. And sometimes for various people, 2025 was not a good year. I don't know exactly why. I'm not in their shoes. But I started to get a little bit tired of people saying, you know, 2026 is going to be a much better year. I'm sure it was a tough year out here in D.C. We had government layoffs that affected a boatload of people, but in the latter part of the year, and that's nothing to just lightly gloss over. We've had, all kinds of things happening around, as happens in the world, all things happening around the world. They renamed the Kennedy Center the Trump Kennedy Center. And, you know, there's just stuff going on. And I got to tell you this, I'm not a big fan of, and I was raised in Utah as a conservative Republican, and I don't talk politics on this show very much, because I've been in D.C. for 36 years, and I've seen 9 different administrations come and go, and the country seems to outlast the president, and that's a good thing. That's by design, or any administration, not just a president. But you get different policies, different priorities coming into town, and we always seem to carry on and survive, right, and move forward. I'm not a big fan of, for whatever reason, and I haven't researched this, people trying to put their name on stuff. I have gone to the Kennedy Center for many years to various events. I love to go down to the Messiah sing-along. And I don't know, because I haven't done the homework, why someone would want their name put on, or maybe the board of directors down there just decided to do it themselves. I don't know. I really don't. And I won't take the time to research it. But you know, we're not going to rename the Washington Monument the Trump Washington Monument. We're not going to rename the Lincoln Memorial the Trump Lincoln Memorial, right? And the Kennedy Center was set up in honor of John F. Kennedy, and I think should stay that way, frankly. That's the way it should be. I don't understand why, you know, nobody made an effort to call it the Bush Kennedy Center or the Reagan Kennedy Center, et cetera, you know. So I don't understand what's behind it, but I'm not a big fan of people trying to put their name on something in addition to another name that's already there. I just don't think that's not what it's all about. Your job is to serve people and do your best not to draw attention to yourself, right? That's just the fact. And speaking of not drawing attention to yourself, I want to talk about, and I'll actually pull this one up a little bit because we're still kind of in the holiday season, a little bit of the Christmas season, even though it's, you know, a week old, et cetera. I want to talk a little bit about some stuff that I've learned this year that I didn't know before. And this is exciting stuff. This is kind of a little bit of a holiday show type of thing. But in honor of, or this concept of, you know, putting your name on something, I just want to take a moment to highlight somebody that is kind of the sleeping giant of Christmas. That is the guy named Joseph, who was the earthly father. What do we call him? Stepfather, whatever, the adopted father, the fill-in father for Jesus. This guy has an amazing story, and I've been studying it a little bit, and because it's the holiday season, I just want to talk a little bit about this, going off some notes that I have from stuff that I've been reading. And Joseph will play, excuse me, prominently in this. You may have to excuse me a little bit. The flu's been going around. I don't have it, but I do have a little bit of a rusty throat, we might say, so to speak, which is critical when you're doing a radio show. Anyway, to understand Jesus's birth, it starts with understanding the steps that were taken in a Jewish wedding on his day. And this is a junk removal radio show, but I'm trying to suggest that when you dig into a topic and you study it, that's a lot better than just reading it, because it's in the studying of it that you gain the additional insights, and it's those additional insights that are worth their weight in gold. Drink a little bit of water here, try to keep my voice kind of fresh. So you have to understand the Jewish wedding in Jesus's day. First, the age of the participants. Most rabbis at the time of Jesus recommended age 18 for a man and 13 to 14 for a woman. Mary was apparently a young lady. Joseph was not that much older. Second, there's a contract between the families. In most cases, the marriages were arranged between the two families. It was more about survival of the families, not about love and romance. And it was not just the individuals who married, but basically had a couple of families coming together that in mutual support of each other. The groom would pay a visit to the bride's home to speak with the father. And after kind of shooting the breeze a little bit, would get down to the point and say that he's interested in marrying the gentleman's daughter. A price had to be paid that the two parties would agree upon, normally after some negotiation, which could take some time. And once that price was agreed upon, the bride and groom would share a drink of wine to begin their marriage covenant together. That is the beginning of the betrothal period, or what we would call getting engaged. Typically, the father of the bride would try and get as much as possible, realistically possible, from the groom, and I guess possibly the groom's family, because he's going to lose the work of efforts of a daughter in his home, and he needs to be compensated for what he spent raising that daughter. So that contract is a big deal. and that price is a big deal. Once the bride had been chosen by the groom, or more commonly by the families, there was a period of 1 year known as the betrothal. During this time, the couple still lived apart. Dowry was arranged by the groom to be paid to the bride's father as compensation for his expense of raising and caring for his daughter, and his loss in not having his daughter around in the future to help with family responsibilities. Normally, the bride's father would negotiate for as much as he thought he could get. We mentioned that. Some money was also set aside for the bride in case her husband died prematurely. And at some future point, unknown to the bride, the groom would come for his bride. Since the bride didn't know when this was going to happen, she kept a lamp full of oil always ready in case he would come at night. And normally, and get this, she had 10 bridesmaids at her side who also needed to be prepared. That was the normal number of bridesmaids you had at a Jewish wedding in Jesus's day. So when Jesus gives a parable about the 10 virgins and their lamps with oil and a wedding and a bridegroom, there's a reason why he chose the number 10. That was the number that was customary and normal at that time for the number of bridesmaids. I didn't know that. Now, it was a period of 1 year. That's because this betrothed period, because during that, the groom would make ready a bridal chamber either attached to his father's house or an actual room inside the house. This is a construction project. His father would oversee the construction and give his final okay when he deemed it ready. Period typically took 1 year so the new chamber could be appropriate for the new couple. You can't just let the groom say, okay, it's ready, because the groom's going to cut corners and, you know, want to be with his bride, and the chamber's not going to be appropriate. So it's typically a period of 1 year. The chamber would be the couple's home for about 7 days, during which they would consummate the marriage once they moved in, and it's going to be their home after that, too. But that's the place where they basically would honeymoon for 7 days. They were not deemed married until the marriage had been consummated. So there's a 1 year engagement period. The marriage is not finalized until it's been consummated. A best man would wait outside the door of the chamber during the week, waiting for the groom to announce that the marriage had been consummated. And once it has been, the groom would call through the door, hey, we're good, we're married. And then he would go and spread the word, and the party would begin. Enough food and supplies for 7 days had to be prepared to sustain the couple during their honeymoon inside. So it wasn't just getting the place ready, it was providing it with stuff to live off of while you're in there. Part three, the marriage ceremonies. They began only once the official contract had been signed and agreed upon by the two families. The chamber had to be finished. The weddings typically extended between 5 to 7 days. The whole village participated. The bridegroom and his friends would march to the bride's house to get her. A procession was formed under the direction of one of the bridegroom's friends, who acted as the master of ceremonies for the event. This is the best man kind of stepping forward. Often the groom wore splendid clothing, including a crown. The next day was the wedding feast. Usually the bride sat under a canopy dressed in white, surrounded by her bridesmaids, usually 10 of them, like we said before. Eventually, the groom joined her under the canopy, and once that happened, the whole village intermingled between men and women. This was a big deal. Those wedding feasts often lasted 5 to 7 days. The whole village participated. You know, it's not like you just silently run away and elope in these days. This is a big deal, and a marriage, it's joining two families together. So it's not just, you know, a guy and a girl saying, hey, let's go down, you know, to the local, you know, clerk's office and get married. It's much more than that. It's a big deal, and the whole village knows about it. Now, that brings us to Joseph. That was kind of the lead-in. And I hope what the message that comes through in talking about this is that there's more to the story than meets the eye. One of the things I've often been fascinated with is Luke chapter 2, where it talks about the birth of Jesus, not only because of what we're told, but maybe because of what we're not told. Apparently, according to one biblical scholar, this is about Joseph now, there was no such thing as putting someone away privily in Jesus' time. Given that the wedding was a big village ceremony, you don't exactly privately step out of a wedding situation, right? And Joseph knew two things going into this thing. One, he knew that Mary was pregnant.
And two, he knew that he was not the father. That's what he knew. His only conclusion was that Mary had been unfaithful to him, and breaking a betrothal required a divorce. Joseph was going to keep the reason for the divorce secret. In other words, that's the deal. That's where one biblical scholar, that's what privily means, or privately, etc. He's going to keep the reason for the divorce secret. Now think about this. A formal accusation of immorality would result in a stoning of Mary. Typically, that's done at the doorstep of the bridegroom's father's home, so it brings shame upon the whole family. It's either a stoning of Mary or more possibly a denunciation of her publicly and humiliation for the rest of her life. Instead, he would give her a no-fault divorce per Deuteronomy 24. So what's going to happen, what he's thinking about doing, Joseph was a thinker. He took a huge risk in this approach personally. Number one, who would want to marry him later, given that he broke off the engagement to his fiancée when she was pregnant? Nobody. No father's going to get excited about his daughter marrying Joseph after Joseph breaks off this first one. And that's the way it's going to look to the public. Joseph's actions put himself on the hot seat instead of his fiancée, which would impact Joseph for the rest of his life and would take the pressure off of Mary. Now, I didn't realize this. That's what one scholar suggests is happening, and it makes a heck of a lot of sense to me. This is a very, very good man who is willing to put his own reputation out there at risk and lower it, basically, when in fact he did nothing wrong, but he is protecting the woman that he loves in the process. Now, think about this also from Mary's standpoint. She was with child. That's kind of a hard thing to hide. And remember, the penalty for adultery back in these times, according to the law of Moses, was death by stoning. So if he brings no accusation against her, then everyone would assume that Joseph was the father, and they would assume that he had been immoral twice over. First, by getting her pregnant before they were officially married, and second, by abandoning her once she was pregnant. If he wasn't the father, surely he would have denounced her openly. Joseph would not be praised for his kindness, but he would be condemned. And that's what he was willing to go through to protect the lady that he loved. Another aspect about Joseph, he was a just man. This doesn't mean that he was a hard man. He was willing to take the heat, leaving himself open to many horrible accusations for the rest of his life. He would protect Mary, even though, as far as he knew, she had wronged him horribly. He was a kind, compassionate, merciful man. Double exclamation point, reading off my notes. We're going to stop there for a second. We'll take our first break. We're talking about some holiday stuff here on the Junk Refund Show and talking about how to get some of the junk out of your life. And in this case, maybe some of the quote-unquote junk out of the scriptures where you try to figure out what's really going on here. That's all we're trying to do as we start off the new year with hopefully a bang. You're listening to Junk Refund Show. I'm your host, Alan Cook. We'll be back in a minute after we take a quick break.
Have you ever hired one of those expensive junk removal companies, then wondered what they did with the stuff? Especially the good stuff. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we junk the junk. Recycle stuff like metal and wire. Donate items and get you receipts. And put up for sale the good stuff. And if it sells, you get some money back. Cynthia paid $375 for junk removal and got $3,200 back. Would you like to know how she did it? Tune in to the Junk Refund Show with your host, Alan J. Cook, every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, to get the junk not only out of your home, but also out of your life.
Hey, welcome back to the Junk Refund Show. It's a holiday show. We're talking about going back a week to Christmas, talking a little bit about Joseph and Mary. And
what kind of a man Joseph was, because this is a great story that deserves more attention. And anyway, the point is, throughout what I just explained, Joseph wanted to shield Mary. Now, he doesn't have to do that. Nobody's paying him to do that. That is a choice of his own. And the only way you can shield her is to put your own reputation out into the public in a less than favorable way. That is a great man, period. It's not about him. It's about somebody else. And he's willing to take the heat for someone else's actions when he doesn't know the full story. And that's a great man. In doing this, he was jeopardizing his entire future. Who would give their daughter to a man who had earlier divorced his pregnant fiance? And like we said, he's known in the scriptures as a just man. That means selfless, compassionate, and righteous. Now, something else to know about Joseph. He was a descendant of David, the king of Israel. He was the heir to the throne of David, as laid out earlier in the genealogy contained in Matthew chapter 1. He would have been Israel's king. Joseph probably realized in that position, in that situation, and that this young man is going to be the father of the Son of God, and the Son of God is going to be the king of the Jews. Joseph realized there's kind of an early death sentence perhaps in his future, because Jesus can't be the king if Joseph's alive. Joseph would be the king. Joseph won't be the king because of Roman rule. But if that wasn't the case, Joseph, the carpenter, would have been the king of Israel. And his son Jesus would have been the heir. But you can't have two kings at once. Mary is mentioned often in the ministry of Jesus, but Joseph is not. Was Joseph dead already? When he followed what the angel asked him to do in taking Mary as his wife, was he giving himself an early death sentence? Maybe so. See, these are things I've never thought about until this year. And that's what's making this so fascinating to me. After taking Mary as his wife, Joseph's reputation was in the dirt, because he didn't blame her. So people would have to say, well, he's either been immoral, or Mary had played him for the fool by being unfaithful with someone else. But Joseph's not putting the blame on her plate. Joseph was a thinker. He thought about things. He would have ran this through his head before he acted. But he still followed what the angel told him to do. In other words, fear not to take Mary as your wife. And then he got the explanation that the child that she's bearing is going to be the Son of God. When Joseph had dreams from God, he acted immediately. Once in the middle of the night, in Matthew 2, 13 and 14, he was a man of great self-control. He waited until after the baby Jesus was born to be intimate with Mary, who is known in Scripture as a most beautiful virgin. That's not easy, okay? But he did it. It was dangerous to be Joseph. Herod killed his own sons when he thought that they were a threat. Joseph was the heir to the throne of David, the king of the Jews. Yet he still took Jesus and Mary to the temple in Jerusalem, Luke 2, 21, even after the shepherds had made known abroad the things they had seen in visiting Jesus, Luke 2, 17 to 18. One of the biblical scholars calls these shepherds loudmouths. In other words, they're telling everybody about what they've seen and heard and spreading the word out. That is a little bit of a danger to Joseph and to his family, because you're living in an area that is run by a king who will kill his own sons if he feels threatened by them. So Joseph must have been a little fearful staying in Bethlehem for too long, so close to Jerusalem, when the wise men came and Herod said, Go find out where the king of the Jews is and then come back and tell me. Well, why? Because he wants to eliminate him. And the wise men were warned, don't go back to see him, so they went home another way. This was a life-threatening situation for Joseph and for Mary and for Jesus to be staying down in that area. But he stayed there until the Lord moved him,
and told him what to do. He must have wondered how many loudmouths there were going to be when the wise men talked about their visit to the Christ child. Not only are the shepherds talking about it, the wise men are talking about it. And again, it's making it uncomfortable for Joseph. It's putting him and Mary and the baby on the map, and they don't really want to be on the map right now. They want to be low profile, not a lot of attention, especially for Herod. These wise men served at least three purposes. One, they were witnesses to Christ's birth and its location. Two, they were an additional confirmation for those who believed. And three, they brought provision for Joseph's needs. We assume from Luke 2:24 that Joseph was poor, which is why when they went in to do the offering in the temple, one of the things you could do is offer two turtle doves instead of, what was it, a pigeon or something? I can't remember for sure, or a lamb. You can do two turtle doves. And so it was generally believed that he was poor. He did not have a white van to transport his carpentry tools with him to provide for his family after they left Nazareth. He acted in faith, trusting God to help him take care of his family. The gifts of the wise men did just that. This was a guy who needed a few bucks, especially when he was going to have to take the family to Egypt to escape Herod. He's going to need some kind of compensation to do that. Now, here's another thing. I didn't know this. Joseph had two other famous sons. One, James the Just, who is the author of the book of James in the New Testament. That is Joseph's son. And this James the Just was so godly that the historian Josephus recorded that many thought the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70 came about solely or primarily because of the murder of James. It was Joseph's son who wrote James 1 and 5 that would greatly influence another Joseph many centuries later. Those of you that are familiar with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints know that Joseph Smith, in 1820, read that verse in the book of James, which led to a heavenly visitation and the beginning of the restoration of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which is now an 18 million member church. It was James 1 and 5 that Joseph read that inspired him to pray and find out, what church do we go to? Where's the true church? That was Joseph's son. Jude, later in the New Testament, the author of the book of Jude, was also a son of Joseph. And these brothers of Jesus did not initially believe in him. Did the faithful tutoring of a godly father influence them later in life? Probably so. In first century Galilee, you don't just up and move to Egypt and continue a profession. Joseph's carpentry business had probably been handed down from his father, and maybe from his father's father, for generations. The economy of being a carpenter was probably built up over generations. That's a logical assumption. It was Joseph's son, James, who taught us that religion is pure and undefiled, to visit the widows and the orphans and to keep yourself unspotted from the world. James himself, his own mother, Mary, was probably a widow. And so that concept is taught by Joseph's son. Joseph is what one biblical scholar called the quiet giant of Christmas. He chose compassion over condemnation when he learned of Mary's pregnancy. He shielded Jesus from Herod's death sentence of two-year-olds around Bethlehem. He saved his life. He saved Jesus' life by getting him out of there and getting him down into Egypt. He shielded Mary from public shame when she became pregnant with God's son. God guides the humble. And this is an important message where this kind of starts to come down to impact people today. Okay, because this could be perhaps the most important message of this radio show that I'm about to make here. God guides the humble, not so much the proud. Three times in Matthew, God speaks to Joseph in dreams and he immediately obeys. He listens, he yields, and he obeys. Pride closes people's mind. Humility opens people's hearts. Obedience opens the door to divine purpose. For example, when Joseph was warned in a dream to take the child and his mother and go to Egypt, he took the child by night. He didn't wait around and philosophically discuss it. He just obeyed. When notified that Herod was dead, he arose and took the young child to the land of Israel. Where God finds ready obedience, he unfolds his purpose. That's big. Where God finds ready obedience, he unfolds his purpose. Joseph's righteousness protects others. His obedience protected Mary and Jesus when he took them to Egypt. His obedience brought them back safely too. Silence often speaks more powerfully than speech. This is important to realize in a day of social media, where everybody's trying to speak as loud as they can, get as many followers as they can, get as much attention as they can. Silence often speaks more powerfully than speech. Joseph lets his walk do the talking. Not a single word from him is in Scripture. The gospel tells us what he did, not what he said. In a world overflowing with noise and information overload, Joseph reminds us that lives of simplicity, this is the point. Joseph reminds us that lives of simplicity, steadiness, quiet devotion, and self-forgetfulness often carry the most enduring influence. Joseph's silence was not emptiness, it was eloquence. Faithfulness in small things is greatness in God's eyes. Joseph never preached a sermon, never shaped public policy, never performed a miracle. Yet God entrusted his son not to a king or a priest, but to a carpenter. Behind Jesus' growth was a father of labor, leadership, and example. Joseph's greatness lay not in extraordinary achievements, but in consistent attention to the ordinary. So those of you out there who might say to themselves, well, I don't have a radio show. You know, Kennedy Center wasn't named after me. I don't have a million followers. And when I do a concert somewhere in the world, people don't buy it out a year in advance. That's fine. You don't have to have that. Joseph's greatness lay not in extraordinary achievements, but in consistent attention to the ordinary. That is real greatness. He took Mary as his wife because he was told to do that by an angel. He named the child Jesus as he had been instructed. He made the trip to Bethlehem for the census. That's a 90-mile trip, by the way. He presented Jesus in the temple according to the law of Moses. He journeyed to Jerusalem every year for the feast of the Passover. That's a dangerous thing to do when your son is getting a reputation for going to be the king of the Jews. He taught Jesus a trade, and none of these is spectacular. Heaven sees greatness where earth sees only routine. Because Joseph was trustworthy with the little things, he entrusted him with something immeasurable. The guardianship of his only begotten son. And we'll kind of wrap up this part of the show with this. And I'm sorry, this is somewhat of a sermon, but hey, this is great stuff. Not because of me, but just because of the stuff that I'm learning here. God chooses ordinary people to accomplish extraordinary things. Joseph is not a priest like Zechariah, not a king like David, and not a prophet like Isaiah. God chose a stuttering shepherd to confront Pharaoh. That was Moses. He chose the youngest son of Jesse, overlooked by his own family, to become Israel's greatest king. He chose fishermen to become apostles. Paul reminds us this is how God works. Joseph's greatness did not lie in status, education, or influence, but in availability. Let me read that one again. Joseph's greatness did not lie in status, education, or influence, but in availability. His obscurity did not disqualify him, it prepared him. See, this is a different look. This is not somebody who's trying to be in the public eye. His obscurity did not disqualify him. It prepared him. Heaven doesn't measure influence the way earth does. It's not how big something is that counts, but the posture of your heart that determines your usefulness in God's economy. One more time. Heaven doesn't measure influence the way earth does. It's not how big something is that counts, but the posture of one's heart that determines usefulness in God's economy. What God favors is self-efficacing compliance with his will. Walk faithfully in the places that God has ordered, and you too can become remarkable instruments in the hands of God in doing his work. There you go. That's my sermon for the day. We'll come back and talk about some other stuff in a minute, but just remember these concepts. This is soothing for the soul. If you're one of these people who feels like, well, I just kind of have an unexceptional life, a routine, boring life. I'm a quiet person. I'm not out doing a lot of public speaking. I don't have followers. I'm not even on social media. Guess what? That's just fine. Because the greatest person of all things considered, the smartest, the most well-known, the most powerful is God. And if you are on his team in some way, you're playing for the very best coach. There isn't a better coach. Okay? And you're playing for the very best coach. And that's the team you want to be on. So it doesn't matter how many people follow you. It doesn't matter how well-known you are. It doesn't matter if your name is on a famous institution someplace. It doesn't matter if you have a building named after you. Joseph doesn't have any buildings named after him, but he was the best man on the planet to be put in charge and to be trusted by God to raise his only begotten son. It gives you insight into how God works and what's important to him. And there's no one that we should be more concerned about trying to please than him, because he has it all. He can do whatever he wants. He has all power, all knowledge, perfect love, happiest person in the universe. And that's the team you want to play for. That's who you want as your coach. So we'll take a break here for a minute. That's kind of the religious part of the show. We don't really delve into that too much, but hey, it's that time of year, and it's only been a few days since Christmas. And maybe because my middle name is Joseph, my grandfather's name was Joseph, I'm named after him, I wanted to do a shout out to this wonderful man who accomplished so much and is known as the quiet giant of Christmas. One of these biblical scholars summed it up really well. He said, when I was a kid, I played a cow in the manger scene at Christmas, and I had more lines in the play than Joseph did. There you go. So anyway, I love that statement. Anyway, we'll be back with the last segment of the show. You're listening to the Junk Refund Show, and we'll talk more about junk removal here in the last section, now that we've moved off the religious stuff. I'm your host, Alan Cook, and we're on the BBS Radio Network. I'll be back in about a minute.
Have you ever hired one of those expensive junk removal companies, then wondered what they did with the stuff? Especially the good stuff. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we junk the junk. Recycle stuff like metal and wire. Donate items and get you receipts. And put up for sale the good stuff. And if it sells, you get some money back. Cynthia paid $375 for junk removal and got $3,200 back. Would you like to know how she did it? Tune in to the Junk Refund Show with your host, Alan J. Cook, every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time to get the junk not only out of your home, but also out of your life.
Hey, welcome back to Junk Refund Show. I hope after listening to that first segment, you have a new appreciation for this guy named Joseph, who was called upon to raise Jesus Christ. And
boy, you better believe if there's a father that wanted a really good guy to raise his son, it's God. And he picked Joseph the carpenter out of Nazareth to do it. A common, ordinary, good guy, uncommonly obedient, faithful, thoughtful, compassionate, considerate. There's more to the story than meets the eye in Luke chapter 2. And I've been fascinated with it for a long time. So thanks for listening to me while I talked about this. Couple of things that are happening in the junk removal business. We are, and this applies to anybody that has a business, wants to make it successful, wants to make it grow, stuff like that. I'm a big fan of making little progress every day, you know, one step at a time, and pretty soon you're standing on top of the Philadelphia Museum of Art in Philadelphia, where Rocky runs up the stage or up the stairs, you know, to dance on top. It's one step at a time kind of thing. In your business, you take one step at a time. In life, same thing. And put time on your side. Don't fight against it. One of the things I've been doing every day is creating a database, a spreadsheet of apartments in my area where we can then send out. I created a postcard that says we haul away scrap metal for free for apartment buildings. And I go into the scrap metal yards all the time, and I see my wonderful friends in there with their pickup trucks, many of them kind of beaten up, and that's okay. People just struggling to make a living who will go out and pick up a washer, a dryer, and something else, and then they go in and, you know, get $20 for it at the scrap metal yard, and then they go do it again. I'm trying to figure out a way to go out with a 16-foot box truck and fill that sucker up and come in and walk out with $200 instead of 20 bucks. And I've done the pickup truck thing many times. So I'm looking for places where I can get more used appliances and metal and wire in one stop instead of having to make 10 stops and picking up one item at each place, which I've done as well. So I'm sending out, I have a database now of 240 apartment complexes in the Washington, D.C. area that have each dozens of apartments there that could call us anytime and say, hey, we got a bunch of washers and dryers down here. Do you want to come get them? And we go down and pick up, you know, 10 or 20 at a time or 50 or whatever, but certainly more than one. And I built that database over the course of the last 30 or 40 days, going in just with a goal to put add 10 more places onto my spreadsheet each day. Do that for 3 weeks and you have 200 places, right? So now I have a spreadsheet that I can go in and print out the labels anytime, and I can do a mailing overnight to 240 apartment complexes in the area. So that's progress. And I can use that database in 2026 to market different things, to put on specials for people moving in or moving out, whatever. And I've got the database there that I can just shoot it right out to those people. You know, putting it in a postcard thing, it's 61 cents for a postcard stamp. I remember when it used to be, I think, 31 cents. But I can do that. And that's exciting to me. I think that's great. Another thing I want to talk about, the Upside app, which I've talked about before. My current balance of cash back in the Upside app is $863. I have generated that in a little less than 2 years. Upside informed me recently, I'm in the top 1% of all Upside users in the country. A lot of people, if you're really good at it, will make maybe $200 a year. I'm making double that and a little bit more than that. But one of the great things they did recently was they added one of the large grocery store chains in the Washington, D.C. area, Giant Food, to the Upside app. So I can go into Giant Food now, buy some food that's on sale, claim the purchase or claim the offer before I go in, pay for it with my credit card that's on my account, and I get another 17% off that's going to be cash back coming back from Upside. That's fabulous. We haven't had grocery store chains like this. We've had pizza restaurants. We've had, you know, burger places. We've had gas stations, but never grocery stores that are offering that much cash back. That is a great deal. So now I go in and I buy something, let's say, is half price at the grocery store. And then, because I claimed the offer before I went in to buy it, Upside gives me another 17% back on the purchase.
So I'm getting even less than half price now, right? And that amount of money just adds up. There's a promo code you can use to get started. You just download the free Upside app from the App Store. And it's one word, U-P-S-I-D-E, the Upside app. And there's a promo code that's great for golfers. If you'll remember this, don't slice a 9-iron or a pitching wedge. DS9PW. David Sam pitching wedge. DS, David Sam, the number 9. P for Peter, W for White. DS9PW. That's your promo code you put in for the offers. And you will get additional cash back when you buy gas. This is mostly used for gas. Now it's more for gas and restaurants. Those are the two biggies. Now in the Washington, D.C. area, we got grocery stores coming on board. Can you imagine going in and buying some stuff on sale and then getting another 17 or 20% cash back from an app? I mean, beat that, right? I went into a store recently, the same store, and bought some stuff 90% off. And then got another 17% off that purchase, which means I'm now buying it at about 92% off. If you do the math, you'll know that I'm right. So I'm buying stuff for 8 cents on the dollar, right? That's just as good as it gets. And I'm a big fan of the Upside app, and I've used it for years, and every time I break another century mark, like when I go over $900 on the app, I'll do another Facebook post and tell people about it. And I'm just going to let this keep building up until I decide what I'm going to do with it. Maybe take a cruise to Bermuda. That sounds fun to me. I have friends that have been to relatives been to Bermuda, and they say they have the best beaches in the world. And I can cruise out of Baltimore. So that's a possibility. But anyway, the Upside app, I'm a big fan of that. And that is something you can do this year to make additional money that you didn't make last year. And you don't have to spend a dime to do it. I think these people at Upside, if I remember right, have given out over $1 billion of cash back. And that cash back can come in. You can send it to your bank account. You can send it to PayPal. You can take it in gift cards, you know, whatever. But get the Upside app, use it, and you use it with debit cards, debit or credit cards. You don't do it with cash. You do it with debit or credit cards. You can load those into the app, and off you go. And you start getting cash back. You might as well get cash back. You're going to buy the gas and go to the grocery store anyway, and the restaurants. You might as well get some extra money back. It's that simple. So anyway, I'm a big fan of the Upside app, almost at $900. I'll let you know when I hit the $900 level. And the third thing, I've always been a big fan, and I talk about this a lot, is Frontier Airlines. I have a daughter out in Utah who had her second child about 3 months ago, and that little girl is going to be given her name and a blessing in church services this Sunday. I'm in Washington, D.C. She's out in the Salt Lake City, Utah area. That's 2,000 miles away. It's holiday time. The airfares are expensive because millions and millions of people are traveling, as you know. I am a member, and anybody can do this, of the Go Wild Pass annual member, which means I'm supposed to pay $600 a year, and then I fly free for a year. The airfares are only a penny, both internationally and domestically, and I just pay the airport taxes. Okay. But the great thing is, the Go Wild people at Frontier the last couple of years have come in about 3/4 of the way through the year, and they've said, hey, if you current pass holders want to renew for next year, you can do it for half price, $299. So for the last 2 years, I've been flying free around the country and internationally, except for just the airport taxes, for $299. Right. So, this is, the new start of the new year, the end of a 2 week holiday binge for people. And there's a lot of traveling going on. So last night, or actually this morning after midnight, so it was about 12:15 a.m. which means it was Thursday, I can then go in and buy my Go Wild Pass flights for Friday. You buy them 24 hours in advance. Sometimes you can buy them weeks in advance, but usually that's not the case. The best deals come on 24 hours in advance. So I'm up, you know, looking at the clock for Happy New Year's last night, and I want to go out to Utah to be there for this granddaughter's event. And I want a cheap flight. And right now the one-way flights are around $400. Well, once I'm within the 24-hour period, or basically the day before, I can go in, and I knew what flight I wanted to get. I wanted to get a flight that left at 6 p.m. Friday night, goes to Denver, quick layover, on to Salt Lake. I get into Salt Lake about midnight. That's the one I wanted. That flight was regular price $400, something like that. Now, probably higher if you go in and look at it right now. Leaves from Reagan National Airport. So this morning at about 12:15, I went on, and sure enough, there's the discounted rate for the Go Wild Pass members, and that flight was $25. I've done this many times. So I went in and booked the flight for $25.01. The airport taxes are probably $25. So I'm going to fly to Utah tomorrow night. I'm going to sit in the exit row seats because that gives me extra leg room. I don't have to pay the $50 upgrade charge because I'm a frequent flyer with Frontier. I will board first. And there you go. And I will fly in comfort 2,000 miles for a total of $25.01. Confirmed seat. It's not standby. It's the Go Wild Pass. Now, that's, as I said on, I think on Facebook, I posted, I even took a picture of the reservation with the price on it, and I posted it on Facebook, and I said, my travel year for 2026 is off to a great start. And there I am flying across the country on a holiday weekend where prices are expensive and millions of people are traveling, and I'm going to travel in comfort for $25. And people say, well, what about your return flight? The return flights on Sunday, there are coming back. There are no Go Wild Pass flights available at all, but they are available Monday morning for, again, about $25. I can't buy them yet at that price. Right now, the Go Wild Pass price is like $150. The regular price is, I don't know, $200 or $300 for Monday travel. But on Sunday, or just after midnight Saturday night, when it's now officially Sunday, then I can go in and buy the Monday flights, and I'll go in. The plan is to buy the Monday morning flight coming back. Gets me back to D.C. at about four in the afternoon on Monday, and it should be, again, about $25. Now, there's a risk. What if it doesn't work? What if they yank that great fare? You know, all of this can come into play. That's the risk of flying the way that I do, is that I can't book a round-trip ticket normally all at the same time. I do one-way tickets, you know, first buying the flight out, then buying the flight back. But this airline goes to so many different cities and different places. I have four airports to pick from in the D.C., Philadelphia, Baltimore area that I can use to come into or go out of. There always seems to be a flight that will work, and that's something that I'm, you know, that I can live with. I'm not worried about that. If I decide not to go on the flight, no biggie. I just go in and cancel it, and I lose my $25. That's no big deal. But I tell you, it is really fun to board that plane first, sit in the exit row seats where I've got plenty of leg room. These even recline. These seats recline. And fly across the country for basically the price of two Big Mac meals. There you go. And it's holiday season, right? It's even better and easier when it's not holiday season. But if you can pull that off during holiday season, you can pull it off at other times as well. So I hope, you know, with a little bit of a holiday feeling here and some of the things we talked about with Joseph, who was we'll call him the earthly father of Jesus, greatness isn't always up on the billboard. And greatness isn't always popping up on YouTube. And greatness
in God's eyes, is somebody who's obedient and steady and will do what he needs done when he needs it done. And nobody's greater than God. You know how people always say God is great? When I was a little kid, I think it was Romper Room, the TV show that said the breakfast prayer in the morning or something, that said, God is great, God is good, let us thank him for our food, amen, right? I think that's where that comes from. But anyway, I hope this show, this is a show that I wanted to make a statement kind of in two ways here. One, by my actions of actually doing the show, because I had sent an email into our producers about an hour ago and said, I don't think we'll do a show today, right? That's the easy thing. And then their dutiful, you know, abilities to call at 2:58 Eastern time to start the show. And I went, you know what? It's the new year. It's a priority. It's a great thing. Do the show. And I didn't have an outline. I didn't have a plan. I kind of was thinking, I just won't do it. I'll start up on January 8th. But I'm grateful to Don Newsom and his brother Doug, the good job that they do at BBS Radio, and grateful for their consistency, even on a holiday. Here we are, starting off the new year with a radio show January 1st. That's a better story than starting off on January 8th. So what you've heard today is literally off the top of my head with no preparation, no real outline except for the Joseph stuff. That was some notes I took on the laptop that I was able to read from. That didn't come from memory. But just remember, as a summation, study something. Don't just read it if you want to get between the lines and get the background story. Study it. Don't just read it. Get the Upside app and make some extra money during 2026 based on purchases that you're going to make anyway. And it costs you nothing to get the app. Check into the Go Wild Pass at Frontier if you fly a lot, especially if you need to go back and forth across the country. And if you have any questions, email me at junkrefund@gmail.com and I'll walk you through things. I've done it for 3 years now and probably use it about as much as anybody I know. There you go. You're off to a good start for 2026. Make it a great year, regardless of what's going on around you. You can do that, as evidenced by Joseph's life in the Bible, and as evidenced by lots of other things that are out there. Just make it a great year. And we'll see you next Thursday, January 8th, for show number 2 for 2026 on the BBS Radio Network. Have a great rest of January 1st. The Rose Bowl's about to start, and we still got another game after that. So this is off to a great start. Have fun. Love you all, and we'll talk to you soon on the Junk Refund Show. I'm your host, Alan Cook. Happy 2026.
Thank you for listening to the Junk Refund Show, the longest-running junk removal radio show on the air. Join us next week as we discuss innovative ways to declutter your home, your business, and your life using 20 years of junk removal experience. Find out why we give out free ice cream gift cards to our clients, too. In upcoming shows, we will explore how to get the junk out of your relationships, your spiritual life, your waistline, even your travel life. Plus, call in with questions and situations you would like some help with. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we are committed to bringing the next generation of junk removal, because not all junk is junk. See you next week on the Junk Refund Show, every Thursday afternoons at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on BBS Radio TV.